It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Let me start this broadcast by noting that this program is live. It is, in fact, the 15th day of June, 2023. I'm Robin. This program is, I repeat, live. That is at 5:01 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time of June 15th, 2023. And let me continue by apologizing profusely to the best of my abilities for the chaos of the last couple of weeks. You know how much I hate missing work. You know how much I hate being away from the microphone. You know how much I hate being away from y'all. But sometimes your humble hostess can't catch a break. And it's been a little bit like that lately. Stand by. So when last we talked, yes, Matt, it is. Is that you? Is this Robin? On air and on time? I'm having abandonment issues. You staying? I'm staying. Oh, please, knock wood. Benevolent, beneficent, flying spaghetti monster, goddess of irony, please, just let me get through 3 hours of radio. I had abandonment issues, too. So, let's see. Where were we? I know I got through Monday's program. And then I started on Tuesday, got a few minutes into that. And then had to quit. And a lot of you wrote and said, is everything okay? Everything was okay. It's just chaotic. And I just want to explain, because I probably miss less, I miss less airtime than just about anybody else doing this job. And girl does need a vacation. Girl's going to take one at some point. Or girl's going to bust. Okay, thank you, Lee. The banner from yesterday is still up. Just saying, Lee in New York. That's Lee in New York. Horn ad hoc banner at the top of the webpage, monitor, volunteer. Thank you, Lee. So, yeah, I started into the program, and that was Tuesday. And then I had to stop because I got a call. And it turned out that Ferg and his beloved had been, they had to take the car and go somewhere to do some stuff related to his schoolwork, and had to shoot a video and stuff. And it was a choice down a back road because we learned a lesson. We do not always trust Google Maps or Apple Maps, or we just don't do that. And so it was a choice between going in the ditch or hitting a rock. The rock was chosen, and wisely so. But when car hit said rock, air went out of said tire. And so there was a flat somewhere about 2 miles south of bumfuck West Virginia. And that's when I canceled the program and said, okay, I gotta get the car back home. So it took a couple of hours, and I finally got a tow truck out of Beckley because the lug nuts were screwed up. And they couldn't just put the donut on and get going. Do you begin to sense just how exhausting this has been? I wasn't toting that barge or lifting that bale. But it was just existentially exhausting. So, got the tow truck. Tow truck got the car home. Gave the tow truck driver $330. And was grateful to be able to do that and be able to have our kids home. And then yesterday, I started working on getting the tire fixed. By the way, brand new tires. You know, this kind of shit only happens when you got brand new tires. We remember the whole tire episode with Roy, he of the computer system at my local Walmart. Roy turned out to be the wizard that I thought he was. Nice guy. And so, when it became apparent that I was not going to be able to get a tow truck yesterday, because apparently a lot of the towing companies have just left the business around here, I had to go and get a rental. And then getting the rental turned into an ordeal. And so I got back here about, 6:30, 6:45, something like that, and completely sideways in my own head. And said, okay, that's two in a row. And then there were 2 days last week. And that's too much. So, this morning, bright and surly, I got up and, as a matter of fact, the young man at the car rental place said, oh, no, here's who we use, and gave me their name and number and said, call them. And sure enough, he was right. They were here lickety-split this morning, probably by like 10:30, and had the little Ford on a flatbed and on the way to the world of Wally. And so I took the rental car, followed it over, paid for the tow. At least I'm going to get reimbursed by. And see, that was the other thing. GEICO, my insurance company, could not find a towing company. Said, well, good luck. Find one yourself and we'll reimburse you. So that tow was another $303 and change. But at least I'm going to get reimbursed in, with all deliberate speed by the insurance company, for those of us who know what that phrase means and means most of us. Irish Dave says, my question is, did the snake escape? You know, the one that bit y'all? Do not conjure Samantha the studio serpent. I just can't. And so now I can happily report that the car's back home, brand new tire, mounted, balanced, you know, all of that. And yay for the road hazard warranty. It wasn't $338 this time. In fact, the tire was free because it was brand new. And I also had to run around and do some stuff, some administrative stuff, and golly, just crazy. And yeah, I don't know, maybe this is all just too prosaic to even bother with, but based on the number of questions I've got about, hey, where have you been, I figured I would spend a little bit of time this afternoon explaining, you know, where, in fact, I've been. And hopefully that's the end of this madness for a little while. Although I got to get up and get after it again tomorrow because I have appointments. And that's part of it. I'm back to dealing with things related to the real me, to wit, me now, that I have put off for far too long in hopes that good things can, even more good things can be happening. Just so you know, today I finally filed my official petition for change of name. And I'll get my Y in my first name instead of I. I'm terribly excited about it. And so that'll happen sometime between, you know, the beginning of July and the beginning of August. And I had to run over, and because you have to publish it, you have to publish an announcement. You know. Not quite like a, you know, christening notice in the local fish wrap, but close enough. I hope this doesn't happen much anymore. I really sincerely hope. Now, by the way, this coming Monday is a federal holiday. But I will, as is my wont, be on the air. Monday is the official observance of the federal Juneteenth holiday, and that makes me happy. And lo and behold, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice signed off on a proclamation that West Virginia recognizes Juneteenth, and well, you can color me pleasantly surprised. I'm sure there are some barking and grunting maggots back there saying, yeah, why isn't there a day to mark when the white people got to vote? Well, because the white people have always gotten to vote, maggot. Actually, that's kind of July. It's not even got to vote. It's, you know, found out they were free. And that's sort of July the 4th. You know, if by white people we mean white property-owning males. Or Constitution Day. Same, same. But it's a federal holiday on Monday, and I will be here. Tuesday is one of my favorite holidays. Tuesday is West Virginia Day. I will also be here for that. Tuesday marks the day in 1863, yes, 160 years ago, when West Virginia became a state and stuck a finger in the eye of Mommy Virginia and the Old Dominion and seceded from Virginia in order to be an always free state. That's what the state motto means. Mountaineers are always free. West Virginia entered the Union as a free state and has always been a free state as West Virginia. I'll be there for that too. I'm looking forward to just getting things settled down back into the swing of things, because there's really just too much crazy out there for me to run around missing the program. In answer to your question, Matt in San Francisco, did you slash a lot of tires in your misspent youth? Your tire karma sucks. My tire karma does suck. And no, I didn't. I didn't slash tires. I was reasonably well behaved, apart from occasional runs to the Tennessee state line. I was not a vandal. I wasn't even a Visigoth. But sometimes it's just dumb, bad luck. Darlene in Connecticut says, I would have chosen the ditch myself. What was wrong with it? Too steep? Sounds like a wrecker was needed regardless. Thank goodness for cell phones. Oh, Lord, yes. And GPS coordinates and everything. And I confess, you know, the first 15 minutes or so after I ended the program, I just sat here and did some serious Yosemite Sam cussing. Blue nose, bug, starving, not pull, brazil, whacking, rut, lushin, rat, staggin'. And then I got it out of my system. So that's the story of where I've been. I wish I could tell you that I just snuck off to the beach for a little bit and was freshly refreckled, but no, I'm not. I've been here all along. And again, I hope we don't have a lot more of that to deal with. Yeah, the ditches around here are not friendly places, Darlene. I lost the beloved Mazda CX-9 to a ditch. Things like tie rod ends snapping happen and the like. But the wheel wasn't damaged. Everything's okay. I had a wonderful tow truck driver today. I'm quite honestly used to seeing big old burly men get out of their tow trucks with beards on them that you could strain a bowl of soup out of. And instead today, just this awesome, badass young woman got out and, "What's your problem?" We talked. And we got, you know, I followed her on the tow truck over to, or flatbed really, over to Wally World. And the guy at Wally World was like, "Yeah, just roll it off here, and she can drive on that rim as far as over to the garage door." My tow truck driver got indignant, and she said, "She will do no such thing. I'll just take the tow truck right over there, and we'll just flatbed it down right there in front of the garage door. Is that okay with you?" "Oh yeah," says the Walmart guy. She looked at me and said, "I am not going to have him do you that way." Hey, ooh, nice. And we're friends now. Tow truck driver to me. It's wonderful. Little acts of kindness here and there. They really do make the world a nicer place. She was a redhead. Never mind. So that's my story. I'm sticking to it. And I called and left a note for the guy at Enterprise and thanked him for putting me onto that towing company, because I've dealt with a lot of towing companies. They were really, really, really good. What's the total monetary damage? Someone asks. Total is about $635, but the insurance company is going to reimburse me $304 of it, and then the rental car is like, oh God, $260, and So that brings us to the where we usually start the program. But 18 minutes into the program, I can say that every program here at the Horn almost always begins with gratitude, except when I have explanations to make. So that means thank you to Robert. Thank you, Robert. And thanks as well Barking. Thanks as well to Matt in San Francisco, and thanks to Ralphs. And that's pretty much where we stand. And the fundraising goal stands where it stood Tuesday, and that's $1,550, because, well, I'm not going to include two screwed up days in the fundraising goal. That's on me. Ralph's. Yeah, I got her card. I told her if any time I need a tow, I'll call them and ask for her. She was great. She said, "You know, I get a lot of funny looks." people saying what I do is men's work. And I looked at her and I said, sis, there's no such thing as men's work. There's only work. And work is honorable. Lisa's now focusing on yourself. Girl's got to do what a girl's got to do. Good luck with all that. Well, thank you, Lee. Dave in the Blind with a note. And the crowd goes wild. Girl, all of us down at Crazy Dave's Crucifixion Emporium have been worried sick about you when the program came in tonight. Shock of all shocks, you were on time. There was fainting in the aisles of the shop floor. Do I need to remind the horn listeners how dangerous that can be? We christened a new Goliath 3000 this week and named her after a certain federal judge down in Florida. However, the sighting system on the Goliath 3000 shooting off to the right, the far right, we may have to send our little crucifixion cannon back to the manufacturer. Damn all this paperwork anyway. There's great joy down here at the shop among your followers. Please sacrifice a couple of extra rubber chickens on their behalf. Thank you, Dave and the Blind. Thank you, Dave. And I apologize to anybody who was worried. Emilio said, everybody knows that rock beats tire and boot kicks over rock, but tire runs over boot. I'll think about that later, perhaps under the influence of something potable, or, well, maybe just a really kick-ass sparkling water, or maybe even a Coca-Cola with caffeine. Brother Deacon Asa told me earlier, what was that, Brother Deacon? Caffeine is your friend, tachycardia be damned. Yeah. And Ralph says her offer still applies, her $25 challenge. Thank you, Ralph. That's wonderful of you. Thank you. And an anonymous friend says, I have a show on me if you can roust up $150 from the horn community in a 2-for-1 tripling Miles Bourne repair card challenge. Thank you, kind internet friend. So if we can raise $175, it will turn into $500. And we will be down to only $1,050 in the hole. So that would be fantastic. Oh, God, that would be past fantastic. Thank you. Thank you. To our kind internet friend and to Ralph's. As to when white Americans got their freedom, white man, I nominate September 3rd, 1783, the end of the American Revolution. That's Lee in New York. That's fair. That's fair. Although the question remains, you know, the Declaration of Independence was not a legal document. It was a propaganda statement. It was a press release, if you want to get right down to it. You're not wrong, Steve, in New York. It occurs to me, Steve says, sorry if you already said this, I tuned in late, to hell with a thorn, you done run into and fell plumb into an entire sticker bush. It feels a little bit, yeah, I'll be digging out festering thorns for a little while. Oh, one of these days I'm going to get outside and work on my freckles. So, and that's the news from Mount Colby gone. Don't, Robin. Just don't. Don't even start. Oh, dear, I've mispronounced it. Mealsborn. Repair card challenge. Mealsborn. Thank you for the correction. We regret the error. So, all that having been said, I am behind on a note from Joey. You're 2 days behind. June 13th was the 56th anniversary of Lyndon B. Johnson nominating Solicitor General Thurgood Marshall to become the first black justice on the Supreme Court. And Junior's wasting no time. Excellent choice, as Marshall never instituted martial law and was a
thoroughly good choice for and made a wonderful Supreme Court justice.
Giraffe applauds.
Excellent point, Junior. As now the only black man on the Supreme Court is a complete disgrace. Yes, I'm referring to no pre-clearance Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas once cast the only vote to strike down Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. Section 5 relates to the rights of black people and other minorities in regard to their agency or right to vote. Section 5 was a major component of the recent Alabama decision by the Supreme Court.
And, of course, the whole gang's there, Joey II, the Kangaroos, alongside. It was this week, back in 1902, through the Commonwealth Franchise Act, that Australian women were granted the right to vote and stand in federal elections.
Well, thank you, Joey, too. It appears Australia was 20 years ahead of the U.S.
And so, June 14th is Flag Day, and it's Donald Trump's birthday. I guess that's why Donald likes to hump the flag, considering he was born on Flag Day.
Junior, hump the flag? Forget that this hump Donald Trump has taken a big dump on the flag.
Excellent analysis, Giraffe. On Monday, June 14th, 1971, that is, the New York Times published its first story on the Pentagon Papers. Daniel Ellsberg's release of the Pentagon Papers sent one Henry Kissinger into such a mass panic back on this day in 1971. Kissinger was afraid Ellsberg would expose Kissinger's despicable actions in Cambodia. Savage was the word used again and again when discussing Kissinger's actions in Southeast Asia and around the world. Bombing Cambodia would eventually break the country and lead to the rise of the Khmer Rouge. Kissinger's numerous war crimes caused immense suffering during his years in public office. He green-lighted coups and enabled genocide all over the world. He urged dictators to get their killings and torturing done soon, sold out the Kurds, and ran a botched operation in Chile to overthrow President Salvador Allende's inauguration. Kissinger's post-Vietnam turn to the Middle East left that region in chaos. And on the 27th day of May, Henry the K, Hank Kissinger, turned 100 years old. Meanwhile, a contemporary of that era, Jimmy Carter, is 98 and will probably not make it to his 99th birthday. So much for all that God business. Giraffe has something to say.
The tragedy of Henry Kissinger is that as a teenager, he and his family escaped the Nazis and made it to America. You would have thought that experience would have impacted Kissinger in a positive fashion, and he would have never engaged in endless war crime sprees. What a disgusting, horrible, non-human Henry Kissinger is. I hope some form of hell awaits him. And to think Henry Kissinger attended Harvard? At this moment, I am ashamed to admit that I am studying at Harvard because of the likes of you, Henry Kissinger. Harvard's school colors are black and crimson. In your case, Henry, the black is for the dark days and evil you menaced much of the world with, and the crimson is for all the bloodshed related to your evil actions.
More bad news from Joey II, the Kangaroo. Another Harvard grad died recently, and that was Ted Kaczynski. He committed suicide at age 81. Hell, Ted looks like a saint compared to Henry. Junior's back.
Speaking of the early 70s and Donald Trump having his pool drained causing the loss of documents, would that be considered another Watergate?
Oh, Junior. The llama is very tired. Good point, Junior. Do you all remember some of the names of that time? Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Mitchell, Dean, not to mention G. Gordon Liddy.
Yes, you mentioning G. Gordon Liddy reminds me of another piece of garbage that recently perished. The one and only Mr. Gordon Shitty. Yes, Marion Gordon Pat Robertson.
Former liquor supply officer.
I like to call Pat Robertson Pat Robertson since he fleeced all those people out of a whole lot of money.
Basically, this born-again piece of crap, Mr. M. Gordon Shitty, blamed feminism, homosexuality, abortion, and liberal college professors for killer storms such as Hurricane Katrina and earthquakes. Of course, this was all in the name of the good Christian God. Good riddance to you, Pat Robertson, and it's a shame you lived 93 years on this earth to take money from so many desperate people with your disgusting, bigoted, hateful, misogynist bullshit. Again, so much for that God thing. This has been Joey's Journal for Thursday, the 15th day of June, with Giraffery waving his pride flag on Flag Day previously. There's a $20 pride flag challenge on the table. So now we're up to $540. We can almost get down. We can get down to $1,010 if these challenges are met. $150, $175, $195. 19 people at $10 apiece and one with five, etc., and all the mathematics. Thanks, Joey. Thanks so very much. I found the cowbell. At least I found cowbell number two. Still looking for cowbell number one. It's somewhere here in the studio. So where to begin? And I think I know. I really do. Oh, and hey, if you would like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time Madcap multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, it's presently being very poorly moderated by yours truly. And if you pop by right now, well, the gang includes Theo and Squeaky and Ralphs and Irish Dave and Claire, freshly returned, I trust, from Norway, where spring looks absolutely lovely. Thank you for the photographs, Claire. And Anatole. It looks like a great evening. Yes, redheads are awesome. Claire, redheads are my kryptonite. Always have been. I'm rendered powerless. Lee says, please do not judge people by the school they attend. My confession, I attended a school that Donald Trump attended. Please do not look down on me for that. No, you have complete expiation, and now we're all guessing at which school. But what Joey said about Harvard, a person can be forgiven for thinking that maybe there needs to be some, institutional rethinking of whatever that college culture is, because it's not just Hank the K's alma mater. It's the alma mater of so many awful, truly, genuinely God-awful people. And to add to that, a story that I ran across, I think, last night. And I'm just pulling this from memory. And, well, I don't know. This may affect dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. But a morgue manager at Harvard... Harvard has a morgue because Harvard has a very highfalutin, hoity-toity medical school. A morgue manager at Harvard has been busted because he was carving up dead folks and... like a yard out of road here in Appalachia full of cars up on blocks, parting them out. He was selling body parts from the Harvard morgue for money. This is Harvard, for the love of God. You'd think the Harvard morgue manager would probably make I'm guessing the Harvard morgue manager is not living on, brown beans and cornbread and the occasional pack of fancy ramen with the flavor boost packet or anything. Parting out people. Something is desperate. Something's rotten at Harvard. And Yale. And several other of the Ivies. I mean, for God's sakes, Penn let in nitwit Nero. It's worth remembering that one of his professors said he was the dumbest damned human being he had ever seen in his classroom. Oddly enough, his Republican, the last Republican to occupy the White House, also had an Ivy League professor who said he was the dumbest damned human being I ever had in my classroom. Only I think that was in the MBA program at Harvard. Hark the car and Harvard yard. I don't know. Haven't seen any stories about the morgue manager from the Marshall University Medical School selling people for parts. Go figure. Okay, I will keep that, unless you tell me otherwise, Lee, I will keep that that little factoid to myself. Because we all know that Nitwit Nero became such a psychopathic little juvenile delinquent, he had to be sent off to military school. And that is not the military school is not the school that Lee in New York attended. Well, thank you, Tom, in sunny San Rafael. Welcome back to you and to the cowbell. And to Joey and friends. Thank you, Tom. And let's see. We have knocked down Ken via Ken and then Theo and Frank in Minnesota. We have knocked down $85 of the $195 that are on the challenge table. So we got 110 to go on that challenge, and that'll get us down to $1,000 in the hole, which is fantastic. Again, Horton. The dumb Donald Trump quote was from a Horton prof, Randy says, Randy Radar. And the Wharton School of Business is at Penn. Mr. Franklin, Dr. Franklin's University? Yeah. I know, Ralphs. I know. I try to warn. Ew, carving out body parts. It's gross. But it's Harvard. And morgue manager, John in Central PA, says, damn, they've been doing this shit for decades, centuries even. They were traditionally called ghouls for obvious reasons. Learned this on a podcast about H.H. Holmes. Innards, get your innards. Ice cold innards here. Innards for the taking. Innards at a low, 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 low price. Get your innards. Sorry. But no, I actually had a story in the stack that I thought would make for a good starting place, because son of a gun, the Supreme Court of the United States got another one right today. I know, even a blind hog finds an acorn right now and then. But, and it's funny, you know, there's a 6-3 majority, right-wing majority on the court. And so you often wind up with a bunch of 6-3 decisions. Yeah, think about the Dobbs decision last summer, Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health, in which over half the population found out that from the moment of conception they have no rights to speak of. That's from the dissent, you'll recall. Well, today there was a decision that was 7-2 in the other direction. Kind of flabbergasting. We all know that when it comes to our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties, I am usually not sanguine about the potential for happy outcomes. We had one today. A bunch of white people, primarily in Texas, some white folks in Texas sued, claiming that they were being discriminated against as white people because of the existence of the Indian Child Welfare Act. The ICWA signed into law in 1978 that protected indigenous children from being separated from their parents via things like adoption and foster care, trying to reverse a long, bloody, horrifying, tragic phenomenon of indigenous children being removed from their parents, having their culture erased from them, put in often religious schools run primarily by the Roman Catholic Church. And so the aggrieved Karens sued, trying to overturn the Indian Child Welfare Act, and lo and behold, today, seven members of the Supreme Court of the United States told the aggrieved white Texans to, and this is not the legal language they used, fuck off into the sun. Seven to two, the Supreme Court said Congress absolutely had the power to enact the Indian Child Welfare Act and told the pissed off, the pissy white Texans, you know, the Karens and Brads, that no, this does not violate the 10th Amendment's anti-commandeering doctrine. They did not touch the allegations that the ICWA discriminates based on race, because they said that neither the aggrieved white people nor the state of Texas had standing to even make that claim in the first place. This all just gets weirder. The author of the 34-page opinion, you always have to give the number of pages because otherwise it aggravates the poor little Republicans. The 34-page opinion was authored by the handmaid. And old Balls and Strikes, John Roberts joined in it, as did Justices Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Ketanji Brown Jackson. And yes, you're right, Stephen, New York. The two who dissented were Alito and Thomas. They're always the two toad holdouts when the court does something good. I was going to call them rancid, but that term implies at some point they weren't rancid or were, in fact, fresh or good. So I think nasty is a better word.
Nasty. Sammy Breadbrith and Fappy Thomas are just nasty, nasty people.
The case, if you ever want to look it up, is Holland, H-A-A-L-A-N-D, namely Deb Holland, the Secretary of the Interior, versus Brackeen. And it started life, of course, in Texas when seven petulant, pissy, dainty, delicate, shitty white people, joined by the state of Texas itself, it was three couples, none of whom are Native American. They either wanted to foster or adopt children with Native American ancestry, you know, take them out of their culture. And the biological mother of a Native American child that one of the couples, no, really, his name is Chad, Chad and Jennifer Brackeen, adopted. Four indigenous tribes got in on the suit to defend the ICWA, the Indian Child Welfare Act. But of course, because the case was filed in Texas, the U.S. District Court judge at the trial level found in favor of Chad and Karen and Texas and said that the ICWA was unconstitutional. But then, miracle of miracles, a three-judge panel of the 5th United States Circuit Court of Appeals said, and reversed it, Then they petitioned for a hearing en banc. That means the entirety of the Fifth Circuit. And they sort of reversed the panel's decision, at least in part, and affirmed part of it as well. And that yielded up four separate petitions for certiorari by the Supreme Court of the United States that the Biden administration filed. Texas filed as well. The individual challengers, you know, the aggrieved white people, and the tribes filed. And so we talked about this last fall when the case was argued before the Supreme Court. The handmaid is trying to make a name for herself being a writer, and she said, the issues are complicated, so for the details, read on. God, she sounds like clickbait on the internet, doesn't she? But the bottom line is that we reject all of the challenges to the statute, some on the merits and others for lack of standing. She said that the court would uphold the ICWA. Based on Article 1 that lets Congress regulate commerce with Indian tribes. And then the handmaid knocked down the anti-commandeering arguments. 10th Amendment, damn it! 10th Amendment! I want to see the manager! And by sidestepping the aggrieved white people's delicate and dainty offense at the fact that the government has found that it's a better thing for indigenous children to remain within their indigenous group, they said it violated their equal protection rights as white people. The handmaid wasn't going to make it a complete win, though. She said, well, the adoptive parents, you know, Chad and Karen or whatever, well, they alleged an injury because of the placement preferences of the ICWA, but it wasn't enough to sue because state courts and state officials implement ICWA. So, well, there's no real remedy to an alleged injury. And then she said that the state of Texas has no rights to speak of. Wonder where we've heard that before. Under the Equal Protection Clause. And that the state of Texas could not demand that the court vindicate its citizens' rights. That's the part of the opinion that kind of makes me a little queasy. That feels like it's got potential to come and bite back. Anne's boy Neil Gorsuch was not happy signing off on what the handmaid wrote, so he wrote his own concurrence. He said he wanted the federal government to return us to the original bargain struck in the Constitution, and with it, the respect for Indian sovereignty it entails. Has he even read the opinions of the Supreme Court? The Supreme Court was holding as late as the end of the 19th century that it was okay to steal Indian land because, well, the Indians didn't believe in Jesus enough. Brett Kavanaugh, who likes beer and little passed-out teenage girls, said,
He said that the court should have taken up the equal protection issue. He said, it's a serious issue. Under the Act, a child in foster care or adoption proceedings may in some cases be denied a particular placement because of the child's race, and even if the placement is otherwise determined to be in the child's best interest. And a prospective foster or adoptive parent may in some cases be denied the opportunity to foster or adopt a child because of the prospective parent's race. Those scenarios raise significant questions under bedrock equal protection principles and this court's precedents. And we'll take a look at them when a proper plaintiff shows up and actually has standing.
Got to get a pitch in there for the white folks. But see, that's Brett Kavanaugh is not very good at reasoning. He's kind of bad at it. Because at the bedrock of the ICWA is the idea that an indigenous child has a right to be raised within the child's own culture. And that that is fundamental and foundational. But Brat is just waiting for a better group of whiny white people. All but Fappy. The majority opinion was only 34 pages, but Fappy wrote 40. You might recall he wrote 50 to talk about how black voters in Alabama shouldn't have the right not to have their votes diluted. Just a question. Is, in fact, Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas the most self-loathing black man in America? Because he sure seems like it. He blamed, of course, the federal government attempting to regulate child welfare proceedings in state courts, and that should raise alarm bells. And he said that the Indian Child Welfare Act, which, by the way, has gotten along just fine for 32, 42, 52, 55 years, somehow suddenly is
intruding upon a longstanding domain of exclusive state power, and there's nothing that allows Congress to do that in the Constitution.
No. In fact, if you want to go back to the Declaration, Fappy, you'll find those white men writing about the merciless Indian savages. He said,
this court has never upheld a federal statute that regulates the non-commercial activities of a U.S. citizen residing on lands under the sole jurisdiction of states merely because he happens to be an Indian, but that's exactly what ICWA does.
Well, no, not because he's an Indian. But, Mr. Justice, could I refer to you to the Dred Scott decision? Yeah, Fappy, ever heard of that one? Roger Taney? Anybody? And Sammy Bad Breath filed his own 11-page dissent and said that Congress did not have the authority to enact the provisions of the ICWA that were at issue before the court. He said, Sammy Bad Breath did, that the ICWA effectively nullifies a state's authority to conduct state child custody proceedings in accordance with its own preferred family relations policies, a prerogative that states have exercised for centuries. Yeah, you know? Yeah, but you know what one state exercised? You're right. The state of Maryland exercised its state prerogative in regard to children and families when they turned a blind eye to 242 enslaved people having their families broken up and being literally sold down the river to plantations in New Orleans by the Jesuits. The human eye is an amazing organ. There is no end to the things it cannot see if it chooses not to see them. The tribes, meanwhile, are ecstatic. The Biden administration is thrilled, and justifiably so. Because this is actually a victory for the rule of law. I don't know, maybe it's the fact that the handmaid is the adoptive mother of two children she adopted of Haitian origin. She said, the bottom line is that we reject all of petitioners' challenges to the statute, some on the merits and others lack of standing. We went through that. So President Biden, through a statement, said, our nation's painful history looms large over today's decision. In the not-so-distant past, Native children were stolen from the arms of the people who loved them. You know, just like Nitwit Nero pulled babies off of the suckling babes off the breasts of their mothers at the southern border. Biden's statement continued, the Indian Child Welfare Act was passed to protect the future of tribal nations and promote the best interests of Native children, and it does just that. You know, it takes a lot of nerve, doesn't it? It takes a lot of nerve for a group of white folks to say, no, 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 we know better how to raise an indigenous child than the indigenous tribes who've been raising children since well before our ancestors were fighting with the buzzards over what the wolves didn't want, you know, in Europe. But it's a win. That's the most important part. It's a win. And there's a little bit more news out of the legal world. I mean, there's a lot more news out of the legal world. Jack Teixeira, the little asshole Air National Guard dude from Massachusetts who dumped a lot of classified information onto a Discord server to make his dick feel bigger, has been indicted on 6 counts of retention and transmission of classified documents relating to national defense. One wonders if Nitwit Nero will try to glom onto his case. Jack Teixeira is 21 years old and has just flushed his entire life down the toilet. He's been in the stir since April 13th, and I'd say the chances are good he will not see the light of day for rather a long time, and that's okay. So we've made it to the end of the first hour of the program. This here is the Filler Robster, and it's not over yet. God, it's good to be back. It's good not to be subsumed in chaos. And we've got $110 left to go on the challenges that will net us $595, if my math is correct, because of the challenges on the table. $110 is not that much. I mean, it's a lot for one lump, but, you know, here and there, it can turn into a lot more money. And that would be great. It would be relieving, you know, missing 2 shows last week and 2 this week. It does some damage. What else? Okay, well, we missed prayer meeting Wednesday yesterday, obviously. And the centerpiece of this story, I really sincerely could not care less about, namely the fact that the Southern Baptist cult has kicked out of their association 5 churches that have had the audacity, the sinful nature, to adore, ordain women as pastors. One of those churches is one of the largest Southern Baptist churches in the country, namely Saddleback in Southern California. Another bounced was called Fern Creek Baptist from Louisville, Kentucky. They got bounced in February. They appealed it, and 12,700 Southern Baptist Convention members, which they call messengers, voted yesterday to reject the appeals and said that the churches were no longer in friendly cooperation with the denomination. That means that they didn't despise women enough. And then they amended their own constitution. More on amending constitutions in a moment. They amended the constitution of the Southern Baptist cult to reflect that churches may only have men as any kind of pastor or elder. I mean, you let the women in, and then there's no fun left. I mean, they're dainty and delicate, these Southern Baptist men, and, well, they need the safety of men-only spaces, like entire religious hierarchies. And so there may be 1,900 other Southern Baptist churches that wind up getting bounced, too. But that's really not what the story's about for me. It's about the fact that these Southern Baptists gathered together for their convention in Sodom on the Mississippi River, Gomorrah of the Bayous. That's right, New Orleans. And I guarantee you that the sex workers, male, female, and non-binary alike, are having one of the best weeks of their entire career. They probably had to import more sex workers into New Orleans just to cope with the demand from these Southern Baptist perverts. Because they are. I mean, and ladies, gentlemen, nibblings, who do sex work in New Orleans or elsewhere and have gone to satisfy the needs of the Southern Baptists, get the money up front, y'all. They're Baptists. If you don't, they'll just leave you a dime under a cocktail napkin with a Bible verse on it. And the minute the Baptists, most of them Republicans, leave town, well, for starters, I hope you're already on PrEP. Second, I'd go and get tested for everything else, too. Gonorrhoeherpesiphalmidia. Because they are a dirty bunch. Nasty bunch. A viral bunch. And to the extent that there's a bunch of men down there Southern Baptisting in New Orleans, well, you know the old story. I've mentioned it 1,000 times. The Pope at Rome does not recognize the authority of the maximum metropolitan of the Greek Orthodox Church. And Protestants don't recognize the authority of the Pope at Rome. And Southern Baptist deacons don't recognize each other in the liquor store. Ugh, so gross. And I'll bet you the sex workers in New Orleans are having to charge extra because, oh no, those repressed freaks, they're not just going to pay some money and make the beast with two backs. They're going to do the nasty shit. But moreover, this is about women participating in as members of Christian clergy. Someday I will understand why any woman... No, I probably won't. I take that back. I'll never understand why any woman, cis or trans, would have anything to do whatsoever with any of the Abrahamic religions. No, your hair is too long. Cover it up. The men are too prone to being passionately inflamed by the sight of a hairy ankle. God, it's disgusting. And yet here we are. I see posts from time to time on forums that I visit of women like me. And they talk about how, well, you know, I'm stealth. Nobody even knows I'm trans. And I attend a conservative Christian congregation. And of course, the first thing that goes through my mind is, oh my God, honey, you hate yourself. That's a lot of internalized transphobia you got going on there, sweetie. I mean, I guess it's a little different if, like, it's a United Churches of Christ or maybe the Unitarians or the Metropolitan Church, that kind of thing, you know, welcoming churches. But still, the underlying ideas that women are somehow inferior beings, all the bathing and all the purifying and all the conniptions of the men about periods and birth and such like. It's just frankly too gross for comprehension. But the main purpose in bringing that story up was just to extend a little bit of sympathy to the sex workers in New Orleans. Because the money may be good if they get it up front. But it's kind of like lawyers who do divorces. No matter how much money you get up front, it's always going to cost more than you counted on. And I'm talking about from the lawyer's standpoint. And thank you. Thank you so much to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you, Charlene, original and founding member of the Society of Leans. So we are down to $85 to meet the challenges that are on the table. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you so much. Theo said, subject line, women in the pulpit? Horrors! Yeah, right. Hi, Robin. Welcome back. Thank you, Theo. I hated being away. And this is the lamest, most pretentious argument around spirituality that I can imagine. Having worked with numerous Wiccan priestesses, including a delightful trans woman, along with a trans man who's a Franciscan brother, I've seen firsthand how superbly these people manage their demanding work, and my experience of them goes back decades, through some devastating crises. Yeah, it's like the poor, delicate, dainty Roman Catholics having a conniption over the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Look the other way, dum-dums. They're not trying to invade your space. They're trying to serve and minister to their own community, who, by the way, want nothing to do with your weird and misogynistic cult. Not saying, just saying. But I mentioned the amendment of the Constitution. Damn, I wonder what the pollen is right now. Clanny Granny. You knew we were going here, didn't we? Clanny Granny has declared, Lauren Bobblehead Boobert, I will forever remember being on the Capitol Plaza, and you're like, hi, Lauren! And we go, hi! Oh, she is a, or at least thinks she is now, a constitutional scholar. And in her barking and grunting, she's hollered about how the Second Amendment's here to stay. It's absolute. This is back in February. A recent report states that Americans own 46% of the world's guns. I think we need to get our numbers up, boys and girls. How'd that whole get things up thing work out for you there, Lore, with you and your ex-husband who pulled a excuse me while I whip this out in front of a teenage girl back there in Colorado? Well, she's been at it lately. Running her ignorant gob in another hearing. Attacking a witness over burdensome federal regulations. Previously, Clanny Granny had said, we don't just change the Constitution to get rid of the things that we don't like. Actually, Lore, that's exactly what we do, and we've done it 26 times. Don't tell her. And so in this particular case, and we've had other clips from her, and she's amazing. Freshman member of Congress Jasmine Crockett, a Democrat from Texas, indirectly took down Clanny Granny. And, I mean, threw her into the turnbuckles, helicoptered her over her head, slammed her into the mat, and took her down for the three count. It all happened in an oversight committee hearing about regulations relating to things like wetlands, watersheds. And this particular story has been banging around for a while. The poor, poor family who were prevented from building their dream home because it was in a wetlands. And it just so happened that Bobblehead spoke before Jasmine Crockett got her chance. This is good stuff. I'm rapidly becoming a Jasmine Crockett fan.
of $10,000 per day had their property misclassified as a wetland and were prevented from building their family home. It may not be a $2.5 million home like yours, but that sounds like a lot of red tape to me.
Excuse me.
Do you disagree?
I really take that as a personal
assumption. Do you disagree?
My home.
Do you disagree that this was an overreach?
I disagree that you're casting aspersions on
me or my...
Ms.
Katzen, my time is expired.
Mr. Chairman, could we just ask all of our... good members to respect the civility and decorum and the integrity of the witnesses who've come forward at their own expense to testify before us today. And an insult is not a substitute for an argument. Yield back to
you. The chair would advise the members to adhere to the House standard of decorum and proceed in order. Ms. Crockett of Texas is recognized for 5 minutes.
This committee runs my pressure up. And I do come prepared to committee, and then there's always somebody from this side that does something ridiculous that throws me all the way off. So, Jesus. Okay, so.
That's gold. Oh, Jesus. She's taking the Lord's name in vain. Nah, honey, that was a prayer. Jesus, give me the strength not to wring that dumb woman's neck.
Somebody from this side that does something ridiculous that throws me all the way off. So, Jesus. Okay, so this is where we're going to start, Ms. Katzen. First of all, let me apologize because that was uncalled for. So let me do what she would never do, which is to be an adult in this room or in this chamber. So let me start there. I'm also going to start with some nonsense that she was trying to spew. And unlike Ms. Boebert, I am legally trained and I've passed a few bar exams.
Ooh.
And I also legislated before I got here. So I do want to start with correcting the record a little bit. And if you want to add to that, please do.
You know that Bobblehead was cussing all the way back to her office. Oh, I like Jasmine Crockett. I like her a lot. Nonsense. And I've passed a few bar exams, unlike my esteemed... didn't even bother to call her esteemed colleague. I do appreciate a Democrat with some fire in the belly, don't you? And I just want to point something out, too, by the way. We are an hour and 18 minutes into the program, and I don't think we've even mentioned Nitwit Nero. Now, there, that ship just sailed and sunk. But isn't that refreshing? Because I don't know about you, but lately, if you turn on the multimillionaire for-profit media, it's just wall-to-wall Nitwit Nero. And, yeah, there's news, sure. But it just gets wallered like a junkyard dog over an old bone. And what's, That clip of Casey Kasem, ponderous, man, ponderous. And it just is. There seems to be a consensus that he is doing a fine, fine job of hoisting himself on his own petard. And, in addition to playing the fool's role of give him enough rope. But having mentioned fools, well, look, here we have former South Carolina Governor Nimrata Haley, who just keeps somehow or another getting whiter. I don't know how that works, but, well, Dateline, Columbia, South Carolina stan, where she grunted and bleated recently, Nimrata Haley did. But if she's elected president, she won't have no problem giving Nitwit Nero a presidential pardon if and he's convicted. She went on and said, when you look at a pardon, the issue is less about guilt and more about what's good for the country. And I think it would be terrible for the country to have a former president in prison for years because of the documents case. That's something you see in a third world country. I saw that at the New 90 Nations, you know, back when I was U.S. ambassador to the New 90 Nations, and I was taking that phone call from the Moscow Morning Zoo crew at 91.2, the Vulgar Boatman. I thought I was talking to the president of Poland. And we got to talking about a nation that don't even exist, an island nation called Bonomo, and I just got completely sucked in with all of it. Right? So I saw that at the New 90 Nations, so I'd be inclined in favor of a pardon. But he ain't been convicted yet. Which I guess was sort of an attempt to recover from what she'd already said. The idea that he would be in prison for years, her words, for years. No, corrupt politicians who don't go to prison, Nimrata, is what you see in third world countries. And we don't really use the phrase third world countries anymore. Hun. We say things like developing nations. Or in the case of some of the countries that you obviously are partial to, brutal dictatorships. And no, she is not the sharpest knife in the chandelier. The pardon is about mercy. For people who deserve mercy. Granted, it was perverted and corrupted by Nitwit Nero, who simply used it as a tool to help his cronies. Just vulgar perversion. And, of course, there it was, Nimrata bleating. I mean, you can't have one standard for Democrats like Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden and then another standard for Republicans like Donald Trump. And we're seeing that again with the Biden bribery recordings that have come to light. I mean, the country should never stand for that. I think that we should speak up, and we have to be loud about that. There's only one problem. There are no Biden bribery recordings. None. Nada. Zilch. Zip. Don't exist. And, of course, the manifest differences between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are legion. Starting, you know, with the fact that Hillary Clinton didn't do anything wrong, whereas Nitwit Nero is just a walking, burbling, shuffling, shambling felony machine. But it's all over the place. Trader Tot, Don Jr., like I said before, I'm never sure if he's Beavis or Butthead. Trader Tot was working off of the same script. They all are. It has been provided to them by Maggot Central. Trader Tot said that if, what was this? if his daddy's indictment happened in another country, the United States would invade that country. Yes. He went on the rickety podcast of that guy who looks like what rancid hot dog water smells like. I mean, you know, racist Bannon, Stevie Three shirts, and the crocodile tears. Oh, the weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. Oh, the sackcloth and ashes.
Well, listen, I think actually what it's all about is what Tucker actually said last night, which is that the one thing you're not allowed to do in Washington, D.C. is stop the forever wars that seem to get everyone so rich. You're not allowed to go up against China that the billionaire donor class from both sides benefits so much from. You're not allowed to call out those kinds of things. You can
billionaire
do a
donor
lot.
Class.
You can say a lot, but when you actually start putting that into action, that's where they draw the line and the uniparty takes over. That's the unforgivable offense that has culminated in 7 years of trying to destroy my father for doing what's right for the American people, for putting America first. And, you know, I mean, we are witnessing the end of the republic if this is allowed to go through. This is the stuff that we've seen come out of the communist and socialist regimes and dictatorships around the world. These are the kinds of things that if they were going on in other countries, America would be talking about doing an invasion and getting into another war to prevent it from happening. And yet it's happening right here in our backyard, Steve.
Steve. In our backyard, Steve. And see, the only places that Nitwit Nero's git can go now are places like Racist Bannon's show, because Racist Bannon has to keep having these goons on because, A, it's a good dollar, and B, well, he owes the fact that he's not banging a tin cup on the bars and yelling, "Let me out, you filthy screws!" to Julius Geezer. Remember, Stevie Three Shirts stands convicted of contempt of Congress. Somehow or another, is still out walking around free. Yeah, Ralphs, he was on Steve Bannon's show. But that's all he can show up with, you know, on Newsmuck or previously on Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground. Fox. But he doesn't dare deal with anybody who doesn't pick their teeth with their toenail clippings, because he would be shown up for the liar and the fraud and the penny ante cheat, you know, apple falling not far from the tree son of his father that he is. And when they do get anywhere near someone who asks a legitimate question, even if they are at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, shit goes sideways. And if it is at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, the reporter just kind of gives up and moves on. And so it was yesterday with representing Greg Stube. And we've talked about him in the past. He's a real Lulu. Fox News TV Radio Rwanda reporter Carly Shimkus. Bet I know who she's kin to. Well, she asked Greg Stube a modestly serious, fact-based question. It did not go well.
What about the merits of the case? Inside the indictment, it did say that his handling of classified documents national security? Are military members at risk? How do you feel about that?
Well, first of all, you have President Biden, who's running for re-election.
Hunter Biden!
His DOJ going after his number one contender in the general election next year. That's election interference. That's exactly what it is. If Trump wasn't polling as high as he is, or he wasn't running, this wouldn't be happening. It's the complete weaponization of the DOJ and the FBI, and I'm...
Yeah, no. But you'll notice he can't answer the substance of the question. He has to run away. No, shut up and go and change your armor. And then there's precious Lindsay. Dear darling Lindsay. Manu Raju of CNN caught up with the doyen of smoldering chode. And mercy, but Lady G was in a dither.
It seems to be selective prosecution. So President Trump has every right to defend himself. I think politically it probably makes him stronger in the primary. If the special counsel indicts President Trump in Washington, D.C. for anything related to January 6th, that will be considered a major outrage by Republicans, because you could convict any Republican of anything in Washington, D.C., and I fear that's where this is going, as sort of an insurance policy.
I do have concerns about all the...
Now, this is Senator John Cornholio of Texas.
...the news about misuse of classified information. I happen to be on the Senate Intelligence Committee, and I get classified briefings on a regular basis, and what they did was unacceptable.
So Senator Cornyn equating what happened in the case involving Hillary Clinton to what happened with Donald Trump there, that's an often defense that we're hearing from Republicans, even as there are different set of circumstances and facts in each of those cases. But some of Donald Trump's defenders trying to use the legislative process to pay back the Biden administration of sorts. One of them, Senator J.D. Vance, announcing that he'd place a hold on all Justice Department nominees who are not part of the Marshals Service, but U.S. attorneys and the like, until the Justice Department changes its approach to prosecutions going forward. Any individual senator can hold up the process. U.S. attorneys in particular typically are confirmed very quickly on a voice vote, but otherwise it could go through a much more time-consuming process on the Senate floor. So that's what Senator Vance is aiming to do, as Republicans in the House looking at other ways to try to go after the investigation, undercut it by using the funding process on Capitol Hill. Even though not all Republicans are online, some of them lining up behind Donald Trump, trying to defend him as this case unfolds.
Manu Raju, thank you.
Yes, thank you. But the real clip there is Miss Lindsay. It will be, what was that line? You could indict a Republican for anything in D.C. In the federal rules of evidence, with which I presume Precious Lindsay is passingly familiar, there is something called a statement against interest. He's trying to say that D.C. doesn't like Republicans. I don't know if he figured that out on Grindr or where, but that D.C. would just make up crimes if they thought they were going to get a Republican. But if it were not for the speech and debate clause, that kind of talk would have Lindsay in some serious hot water. Because he's basically threatening the Department of Justice, and there's John Cornyn saying, you know, we're gonna try to grind the Department of Justice to a halt in retribution for doing their damn job. And that's not inspiring. It's, in fact, a statement against interest. So it's going to be an outrage. And then what? The Republican senators will shut the government down? We've seen what happens when you call their bluff. They folded like a cheap suit during the debt limit debate, didn't they? And then there's Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda itself. Story's a couple of days old. May have already heard about it. But during a reader, a split screen of President Biden making remarks and Nitwit Nero grunting into a microphone, whoever was programming the Chiron that day put under the split screen, "Wannabe dictator speaks at the White House after having his political rival arrested." As if Biden was sitting in the Oval Office saying, "Bring me the head of Trump the Baptist." Now, please. Wannabe dictator. In the burblings of Nitwit Nero, he babbles about Hillary Clinton was never president, didn't have the powers to declassify that I had. There's a great day coming, y'all. And I want to be there for it. Now, once they got caught, of course, and I'm so old that I can remember back when Fox News TV Radio Rwanda would get caught doing things like having a story about some odious conduct by a member of Congress who was a Republican. This happened more than once. And labeling that person a Democrat, you know, for the benefit of Emery and Marvelline sitting there in their matching Barca loungers down at the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Court and Country Club. Yeah, when they got caught, they issued a statement. "The graphics are written by each individual show rather than a central network newsroom and provide wide latitude for color and attitude. The wannabe dictator graphic was also in line with other chyrons during the evening's program. Earlier, viewers saw a graphic previewing the Trump speech with, soon Donald Trump speaks after being targeted by Biden's Department of Justice." You know, as an alibi, that really doesn't get very far off the porch. I guess I should probably note at this point that we're a couple of days without any conversation whatsoever. If you'd like to do some conversation radio, the stress line is up and running, I think. Yep, it is. That's 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN, or the Skype line, Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn, one word, K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, on Skype. Either one of those will get you quickly and easily into the program if there's something on your mind. I'm sorry, I have to look at this. Apparently, in my junk mail, there's a Mooney for U.S. Senate. Oh, I knew this would be good comedy for a Thorn in the Side Thursday, or, as Steve noted, the whole sticker bush. "Liberal Jim Justice is buzzing in the headlines again, this time because of the 90 lots in his name that are set for auction in McDowell County after he failed to pay his property taxes, which could have been invested in the community to fund our fire departments, pay the salaries of our law enforcement officials, and fund our public schools. Instead, Jim Justice refused to pay his fair share, totaling $46,796. One, Looney Mooney is from Maryland and probably couldn't find McDowell County with a GPS and a pack of bloodthirsty Louisiana prison bloodhounds. Two, a Republican complaining about someone not paying their taxes is nothing if not fucking hilarious. Mooney's campaign manager, some spokes creep by the name of John Findlay. Actually, it's F-I-N-D-L-A-Y. Is that John Findlay? That's going to be a great name on Grindr, John. While shocking, it's not surprising to see the recent headlines given Jim Justice's long history of failing to pay his taxes. Washington has enough issues of its own. The last thing we need to do is send an irresponsible liberal who doesn't pay his property taxes to the swamp. liberal. Jim Justice, liberal. God, if Jim Justice is a liberal, I'm Friedrich freaking Engels, okay? Hint, I'm not Friedrich freaking Engels. I'm sorry, we just kind of had to take that little aside there because we need the little dose of comedy from time to time. And so a general reminder that we've got just $85 to go on the three challenges for the evening. Ralph's, Joey's, and our kind anonymous internet friends. And that could wind up being bringing us down to only $1,000 to go in fundraising. And that is, as President Biden once said, a big effing deal. But I don't want to make the mistake that I all too often do, and leave somebody hanging on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
You guys want to go to Eaton Park and get some gravy fries?
Yeah. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Robin.
Nice opening. Very nice opening.
Sure, I'm going to do what I can. I would like to do more. I would, win the lottery and fund the program forever to your,
we could dig up the fabulous horn pancreas-shaped swimming pool and refill it and bring back a Nets pool boy and the hangar for the Gulfstream 5 and maybe find wherever it was that the Maybach went.
Yeah, I might be interested in a pool boy. I don't really know, but we'll see.
I'm sorry, pool attendant.
No, I do know.
Pool attendant.
Pool attendant. Oh. Well, okay. it gets a little rough sometimes to forget the pronouns right.
That's
sorry
okay.
About that.
That's all right. That's all right.
I don't know. Is it really relevant? Like, it's boys or girls. Assuming the other party is, whatever gender they are. You know what, Matt? That made me think. Maybe the whole birth certificate question, it's just assumed male, presents male, presents female.
Why well, technically, it's, we do that, technically, it like technically, technically, the A is assigned, but I prefer assumed because there's all kinds of assumptions made when
assumed,
babies are born.
Right. Then does that solve the problem? I mean, because there is a problem with your who you are. We don't know who you are when you're,
a baby
at birth. Yeah, a baby or a preborn fetus. My daughter was born, premature. Right. What was she then? What did you call her? Well, a baby, I guess.
Very seldom, even now, is genetic testing done on babies.
Really? Well, On babies. Okay.
Yeah, but that was, but that was decidedly not what you called about. So, I mean,
no, yeah, okay. Let me change the subject. Let's talk about Catholics a little bit. I've had a couple of nuns in my family. I'm thinking of Steve from New York. He's still not Catholic. He said, as far as I know, I had a couple of nuns in my family. One left the Benedictine sisters.
Yeah,
I don't know if you heard of that. I think you probably know of Jones Chittister. It's a hard one to say. Chittister. She's quite an anti-war. It's a vocal group of nuns.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Who really don't support the orthodoxy of the male-owned things, because they're the ones that did the actual work. The priests were the ones that collected the money, and the nuns did the work of Jesus, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know where I wanted to go with that, but it was just kind of an interesting story. My mom's cousin was a prioress of the Benedictine sisters, and it's really here down close to my house. It's really nice. Sometimes when you go hard atheist, that's kind of where I'm at. But maybe forget about other people's feelings about God. Good people that that are religious that still believe.
I get that. So what's going on in your part? I mean, you okay? Anything big going on up there in Northwest PA?
No, not really. I did tell you about my daughter moving in.
Did that get all settled?
She got COVID a couple weeks ago.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And we stayed away as far as possible. Talk across the hallways. Like yelling at each other. But not in the mean way. And fortunately, I didn't get it as far as I can tell. You know, I didn't test, but I didn't feel any symptoms, so... Yeah, it was a little rough.
I can imagine.
Well, she just had an interview for the hospital here. Hopefully that went well. That would significantly make her life better. She takes care of differently able people. Yeah, I think I told you this before, so I don't want to bore everybody.
I don't think you're boring anyone.
Your friends and community. I feel like that. I feel like, I don't know, that's my own personal stupid issues. Depression and whatnot.
It's not easy.
You got any funny stories in the stack?
Oh, I already did the funny story. The Southern Baptist in New Orleans.
Okay.
That's about as funny as it gets today.
Yeah, they're not. It's tough. It was funny some years ago, like when John Stewart, remember. you know, John Stewart, all is funny, and then it became normalized, right? So now it's been gradually worse. We're, you know, the stupid frog in the boiling water. Well, it's boiling now. We're so close to fascism that, yeah. We're there, aren't we? 1939? History doesn't repeat itself. This rhymes.
That's the line.
Rhymes. And, oh, my God.
There's that one great Al Stewart song, Dancing into
1939. Oh. Dancing like a thing. Wow. Somebody should do that song. Get your band on it. Your son, and I'll play drums. We'll be a punk band called The Hornies.
The Hornies? Really? Okay.
Yeah. Why not? It sounds like a good AI name.
Works for me. Well, Ken, I'm glad you called in, and I hope you have a good evening.
I hope you do, too. And I hope somebody calls me, like, forget it. I'm going to call anybody's name, but, yeah, I hope somebody else calls in and has some more lighthearted stuff to talk about. Well, Scott's book pretty funny, so. But everybody in
Scott's kind of do, isn't he? Scott's kind of do.
He is. Last month I gave you a challenge for 25, and you were talking about Rudy Giuliani, and then Scott called, so that's why I thought of it. Yeah, Rudy Giuliani, disgusting. Ew. Ew. And fucking ew. Gross motherfucker.
Oh, he's, yes. Without a doubt.
So, peace, and I hope you have a great night. And peace and love.
Oh, I'm going to try. I have a feeling I will be gone night about as quick as I get the program uploaded afterwards. I'm a tired girl.
Well,
It's been a couple of weeks.
We can't fund it. I'd try, but I'd give you $1 million. I know you're all right. Have a great day.
All right, take care, Ken. Bye-bye. Be well now. Bye. Our buddy Ken up in Northwest PA. Oh, where else to go? Because with me having not been on air for a couple of days, one of the problems that you run across is I don't want to do things that are 2 or 3 days old. But by the same token, some of this stuff feels kind of evergreen. And so Thomas Massey of Kentucky, you remember Thomas Massey. He tried to get all butch with AOC and said, "Don't you be coming down here to Kentucky now. This here's Kentucky." And AOC said, "Well, I'll go anywhere I want to go, and you are welcome to try to stop me." After which, Thomas Massey shut the fuck up. He suddenly found himself in a battle of wits, completely unarmed. But Thomas Massey is nothing if not a lick-spittle little Renfield to nitwit Nero. And when the charges were announced against his orange god emperor, Thomas Massey threatened to read aloud the classified documents Nitwit Nero is accused of having violated the Espionage Act with. He said, for what it's worth, under the Constitution, no member of Congress can be prosecuted for reading aloud on the floor any of the documents Trump allegedly has copies of. And the fact of the matter is that that tracks. As the saying goes on some website, flair checks out. Thomas Massie. Teabagger Maggot. And he was rapidly savaged. Susan Vermazen, who used to be the photo editor for New York Magazine and Rolling Stone, said, so, you're on the KGB Mafia payroll, too? Saudis send you money, do they? Yeah? And speaking of which, this is apropos of exactly nothing. I used to enjoy watching the occasional golf tournament on TV. Yeah, I think I'm done. Now that the PGA has decided to get in bed with Mohammed bin Bonesaw's '54 golf tournament, LIV, isn't it 54 Roman numerals? That's the best I got. That's further than I'm willing to go. Disgusting. But we do have other news. Ron Monkey Up Duplantis has decided to take aim at Carvana, I guess. And it's not often I get to say that Florida got to some right-wing fetish object before Florida did. But we did. It was years ago now that West Virginia attempted to ban direct-to-consumer car sales. You know, you go on Carvana, you check out their prices, and it's just you and Carvana, and there's nobody saying, well, I got to go back and talk to my manager about that and see if we can sell you this here automobile. Well, that's what Florida's done. It is now illegal, pending probably almost certain lawsuit. It's now illegal for auto manufacturers to do direct-to-consumer sales in the state of Florida. Yeah, except for Tesla. Because Leon Scum would not like that. And Leon Scum is all in for Ron Monkey Up Duplantis. The Florida Automobile Dealers Association wrote the legislation, and Ron Monkey Up Duplantis' pet legislature passed it, and so he's signed it. Among other things in the bill, the state of Florida, remember, I'm so old, I can remember when the Republicans were all about the free market. So much for that. Florida maintains control by limiting the ability of automakers to control their dealer inventory and their prices. That means that automobile manufacturers can't show favoritism to the actual automobile dealers who sell more cars and make better deals. That's some free market, that Republican free market. I'm sure it has nothing to do with the fact that the members of the Florida Automobile Dealers Association have given over $2 million to Monkey Up over the last 2 years. They also pumped $230K into political action committees that are run under the aegis of the president of the state Senate, one Kathleen Passidomo, and they gave $50,000 to a state senator named Ben Albritton. The guy who sponsored the bill in the House of Representatives, a maggot by the name of Jason Schoaf, got $10,000 given to his PAC from Brammon Motors exactly 1 week after he introduced the bill. No, that's not corrupt. No. I mean, remember, former Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy said it is specifically not bribery when somebody with a lot of money gives a lot of money to a politician and the politician winds up doing exactly what he was given the money to do. No, heavens no, that's not bribery, said Anthony Kennedy. Oh, no. How could that possibly be? Right? Oh, and today in January 6th, terrorism? Well, today, a guy named Alan Hostetter, who used to be a chief of police, who went to D.C. and participated in the terrorist attack on the Constitution of the United States and the seat of the government thereof, kind of lost his shit in court today in front of federal district judge D.C., Royce Lamberth. Over at CBS, Scott McFarlane reported that Hostetter was trying to get his case dismissed, and he, with a straight face, said that the terrorist attack of January 6th was set up by the federal government. And that even Stuart, you'll shoot your eye out, kid Rhodes, bang, he did, of the Oath Keepers, was part of the grand conspiracy. And this is good. He went so far to say that Rhodes being convicted of seditious conspiracy and thereafter being sentenced to 18 years in prison was all done to make sure that nobody found out that Stuart Rhodes, bang, was snitching on the other maggots to the feds. And he said that there really should have been some Calliope music playing during this. He said that the DOJ put snitches, rats, inside the terrorist attack and then wouldn't tell who they were. One gets the idea that Alan Hostetter may be trying to set up an insanity defense. That or else he's getting information through the fillings in his teeth. This is rich. Judge Royce Lamberth, on the other hand, heard enough and quickly said, "You don't have any facts to support your allegations. Motion denied." And I'm a little curious. I'm running through the stupid poll questions just because I want to see how the... how the people who read this voted. Do you think the January 6th riots were in part a setup by the federal government? 87% of people who read this story said, no, I don't think so. But then there are 11% of people who pick their teeth with their toenail clippings who said, yeah, I think so. The fun bunch are the 1% who said, maybe, I'm not sure. And then 1% other, no opinion. Why did you bother to even answer the question? And then in other, because of course, in other January 6th news, we have Paul Charming Lovely. No, I'm kidding about the charming part. Paul Lovely was actually at one point an IT specialist for the National Security Administration. In addition, and perhaps unknown to his management at the time, he was also a groiper. G-R-O-Y-P-E-R. Among other things, groipers are followers of Nick Fuentes, that neo-maxi-zoom dweeby who once declared, not kidding, that a man who has sex with a woman is gay, because he, Nick Fuentes, has never sullied his penis with a woman. I only report the news. I don't make it out. He's a Nazi. Nick Fuentes is. That's why Marginal Trailer Queen went on stage with him a year or so ago. But yeah, he's a groiper. Paul Lovely is. And he was up for sentencing with the Department of Justice prosecutors asking the court to pretty please put this guy away for 30 days. He's 24 years old. Paul Lovely is. He pled to one misdemeanor count of parading, demonstrating, or picketing in a Capitol building. The maximum term on that is 6 months. And the Justice Department said, a month is okay. And the judge was even gentler than that. In arguing for the slap on the wrist, the prosecutor in the case was one Joseph Nguyen. Said, groipers believe they are defending against the demographic and cultural changes that are destroying the true America, a white Christian nation. Groipers attempt to normalize their ideology by aligning themselves with Christianity and traditional values such as marriage and family. You know, unless you're their leader. Right? Well, the judge understood the severity of what Paul Lovely had done, along with his co-defendants, Joseph Brody and Thomas Carey and John Lizak and Gabriel Chase. They had all gotten together at Paul Lovely's home in Maryland on January 5th. And I guess grunted groiper things. And the next day they went off to participate in the domestic terror attack on the capital of the United States. So the U.S. District Judge Colleen Collar Cottley got dead serious with Paul Lovely and sentenced him to 14 hard, hard days in jail. Brutal days in jail. That Paul Lovely will serve over the course of 7 weekends. And 7 times 2 is 14. That's 7 summer weekends that Paul Lovely will never get to experience. That poor, young, white Nazi. Poor guy. And then he has to be on probation. I'll bet it's unsupervised for 3 long and brutal years. Well, I hope this has taught Paul Lovely a lesson. Now, actually, the fact of the matter is, I fear that it has taught him a lesson. That you can participate in a domestic terror attack on the capital of the United States, and most you're going to lose is 7 weekends. It's another one of those moments when I'm reminded that a failed insurrection that is not properly punished is a dress rehearsal for the one that will eventually succeed. Yeah. Lise, it's 14 days? Wait, that's the total trial experience of Aileen Cannon, U.S. District Judge, Southern District of Florida. And, you know, that might be a little optimistic. Lee? God. And then there's Walt Nauta. Latin first declension, masculine gender, sailor. Hi, David. Walt Nauta has not been dealt with. He has a nitwit Nero lawyer, a pettifogger by the name of Stanley Woodward. But he still doesn't have local counsel in Florida. And over at My Filthy Morning Habit, Joyce Vance came on to say that, Walt Nauta might want to, and you know, he's Nitwit Nero's body man. Okay. But Joyce Vance said that she expects that somebody's going to want to have a chat with his lawyer.
I mean, he's totally going to be hung out to dry here.
Yeah.
And it, his lawyer, you talk about ethics and the spotlight on his lawyer, who's being paid by people who are loyal to Donald Trump. You know, his interests and Donald Trump's interests could not be greater. The difference.
Part,
part all the more. So this is going to be, it's going to be very interesting to see if at some point, whether his attorney gets real, whether he has members of the family that say, hey, listen, you know, this guy's not the most loyal guy, and you could go to jail,
there's another scenario.
Years. Like, you're part of a conspiracy to conceal nuclear secrets. There are people who are actually living in Russia now because they revealed too many secrets.
But you know what Trump does. He loves to gather information on people that can hurt them, it over them.
Whatever he has over him is not worth 100 years in prison, Willie.
No, and I asked Michael Cohen how the
loyalty goes. Is it a two-way street, or do you end up in prison? You can ask Michael Cohen.
Is there some chance,
I ask again the assembled lawyers here, including Joyce, is there some chance that NADA flips at some point?
Joyce Vance?
Joyce, why don't you jump in? Because, again, their interests could not be more diverged than they are right now.
You know, absolutely. Walt Nauta looks like the person that you're going to for cooperation in a case like this. In fact, there's some suggestion in the indictment, it's not clear, that some of the other workers at Mar-a-Lago may have provided some of the information the government has in its complaint. But it's Nauta who's involved in conversations with Trump. He has something awfully powerful to offer prosecutors. There's been some reporting that efforts were made to cooperate him prior to indictment, and that for whatever reason he didn't take advantage of that at that point in time. And look, let's not make light of the potential defense here. The indictment is very strong. The facts in the indictment are very strong. There are some legal issues that the Trump defense team will challenge in this early pretrial stage. Maybe Nauta wants to see how those come out. Or maybe, as y'all have suggested, there's an issue here with the legal representation. We all remember Cassidy Hutchinson saying that as long as she was represented by the lawyers Trump was paying for, she felt like she was being told to perhaps color her testimony. So Nauta may find himself in a very similar situation. He's not someone of independent means. And in essence, he would have to, I think, summon the gumption or perhaps the self-interest to go to the court and to ask for appointment of new counsel. He probably would qualify for a federal defender, but that would mean a full-on break with Trump. At some point, that decision calculus may suggest he should cooperate. And look, one last thing that I'll say in terms of plea deals, DOJ has a strong track record here in cases involving high-ranking officials and pleas. And part of the reason that former officials like David Petraeus, when he stepped down from the CIA, got a plea deal, it was a misdemeanor plea deal with no jail time, it was because the government did not want to have to run the risk of exposing its classified secrets at trial. That sort of a deal will be available to Donald Trump, or at least his lawyers can go in and argue for it. Maybe his obstruction means that the deal that's that good is not available to him. But Nauta has to be thinking in the back of his mind, just how far does Trump's loyalty to me go? When might he try to save his own soul and leave me hanging? And that is something his lawyer should be discussing with him. That's what's in his self-interest here.
When would Trump do that, Willie? In the words of the little boy at the end of Sixth Sense? Every
that bus rolls down the street, push him right out in front of it. Let's get.
They're not wrong. And I'm kind of tickled that Joyce Vance is out there calling him Walt Nauta and not Walt Nauta. Joyce Vance was a federal prosecutor in Alabama. For all I know, she was raised down there just like me. Not sure how old she is. We may have been in the Alabama Junior Classical League together. Who knows? And a little news out of Texas. Already indicted, but somehow or another yet untried, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. You may be feeling a little bit more squirmy now. A real estate investor from Austin has been charged with 8 felony counts of making false statements to financial institutions. A guy by the name of Nate Paul. Texas authorities say he overstated his net worth and understated how much money he owed in order to get loans, you know, by trickery. Federal prosecutors filed a 23-page indictment Friday. The government's looking for $172 million to be paid back from Nate Paul. The allegations cover things he did from 2017 to 2018. basically running a con job on credit unions and mortgage bankers. Now, it's true that there's no mention in the indictment of Ken Paxton, but it was Ken Paxton's associations with Nate Paul that led to him being impeached by the Texas legislature last month. He'll be tried in the Senate sometime in August. Outside the courtroom, somebody asked Paul's pettifogger, "Has this got anything to do with Ken Paxton?" And he said, I don't even know the last time that my client talked to Ken Paxton." Tony Busby is the pettifogger for Ken Paxton. He ran right out to say, "The charges against Paul evidently have nothing to do with Attorney General Ken Paxton. Nothing whatsoever. That should speak volumes as to how weak this impeachment effort is." Oh, counselor, I wouldn't be talking about how weak a case is and asking questions to which I do not for sure know the answer. Well, you know, maybe somebody might want to see about prosecuting those other federal charges that have been hanging around forever and ever against Ken Paxton. Not saying, just saying. Might be interesting. And I guess, well, this might be a case of dog bites man. But we have some RFK news in the stack today. By the way, there is a brilliant takedown, expose, let's say expose, of RFK Jr., as written up by Naomi Klein, I believe it was. Flavio hit me to it earlier. It's chapter and verse of what a charlatan? Grifter? But you might want to go and read it. Just look up Naomi Klein or RFK Jr. Should pop. But the fun part of all of this is that, well, now that he's gone over to the dark side, he's getting dark side cookies, RFK is. And so, sure enough, because he's got a grifty presidential campaign to run, Bobby Kennedy Jr. wandered over onto the set of America's Jack-Off King, you know, J-A-Q, just asking questions. I mean, of course, Joe Rogaine, known to some as Pink Shrek, where Bobby Kennedy Jr. unburdened himself of, gosh, breaking news. And, you know, some paranoia. This guy is, after all, an anti-vaxxer.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
My uncle, John Kennedy, you know, did that. He refused to go to war. So he was surrounded by military-industrial complex, and he learned very early and an intelligence apparatus that he realized early on that the purpose of the CIA and the intelligence apparatus was to create a constant pipeline of new wars for the military-industrial complex. The day, 3 days before he took the oath of office, Eisenhower, who was the outgoing president, gave what is probably the most important speech in American history, which was, you know, where he warned against the military-industrial complex. I was at my uncle's inauguration. I was in Washington that day as a, you know, a six-year-old boy. And I was sitting on the stands behind him, in front of him during his inauguration. And he understood that. And 2 months later, the military and intelligence came to him and said, we got to invade Cuba. And he was like, I'm not going to Cuba, and I'm not going to let the military. And they said, well, we got all these Cubans trained, and they're going to go attack Castro. And he said, well, we can't, the U.S. government can't be doing that. We can't be attacking. I don't like what Castro's doing down there, but it's not the United States' job to dictate what kind of governments other countries have. And they said, well, as soon as they land, there's going to be a big revolution. Everybody's going to rise up, and they're going to overthrow Castro. And he said, well, you can't use the U.S. military. And they ended up bringing those guys over with United Fruit boats. And in the middle of it, in the night, they came to him and said, they're getting wiped out on the beach, and you need to send in the military and invade. And he said, we're not going to do it. And he stepped out of that meeting, and he realized they had been lying to him and trying to trick him. And he said, I want to take the CIA and shatter it into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the winds. And then, you know, for the next 1,000 days of his presidency, he was at war with his military and intelligence apparatus. They tried to get him to go into Laos. He said no. They tried to get him to go into Vietnam with combat troops. They said that we need 250,000 combat troops. He refused. Everybody around him wanted him to go into Vietnam. He sent 16,000 military advisors. That's fewer people than he sent to get James Meredith into Ole Miss in Jackson, Mississippi, to get one black man into school. He sent fewer to Vietnam. They weren't allowed to fight.
Bob, is that really the combat? Is that really the comparison that you want to make? Something about that just rings kind of off key. No, by the way, thank you for being the Joyce Vance Research Department, Rouse. No, she was not raised in Alabama. She was raised in Utah. So there went that. But nonetheless, it was an interesting thing to think about. I mean, some of this is known stuff. I think before John Kennedy said anything about the CIA, didn't Harry Truman say that if he had known what it was going to turn into, that he never would have signed off on its creation? Do I recall that correctly?
Many of them did. They both violated the rules of engagement. In October of 1963, he heard that some of his Green Berets had been killed over there, and he said, I want a total casualty list from Vietnam. And his aide came to him and said, 75 Americans have died. And he said, that's too many. And he signed that day a national security order ordering all troops out of Vietnam, U.S. troops.
Hold on. This sounds a little bit like Bismarck declaring that the whole of the Balkans is not worth the bones of one Pomeranian grenadier, but that's history for you.
The first 1,000 over the next month, and then the rest by the beginning of 1965. And then a month later, he was killed. So, but what his view was is that he believed that the view of Americans abroad should not be, you know, a soldier with a gun. It should be a Peace Corps volunteer building, you know, wells, and it should be USAID helping poor people, and it should be Alliance for Progress building middle class. And that's what he did. And he just started the Kennedy Milk Program to you know, give nutrition to poor kids all over the world. As a result of that, in Africa today, there are more statues to John Kennedy, more boulevards named after him, more hospitals, schools, universities, avenues, and all the major cities named after him than any other president. And that is the Chinese have taken that template.
Wait, the Chinese?
And done the same thing now. And they are, you know, all these countries that were supposedly allied with us are now realigning with the Chinese, and they're switching to their
Yeah, hold on. This needs a little help. Well, when we got to the China part, this really did call for a little help.
Statues to John Kennedy, more boulevards named after him, more hospitals, schools, universities, avenues in all the major cities named after him than any other president. And that is the Chinese have taken that template and done the same thing now. And they are, you know, all these countries that were supposedly allied with us are now realigning with the Chinese, and they're switching to their currency because the Chinese are not there to kill people. They're there, you know, to build roads, to build universities, to build colleges. And it turns out that people like that a lot more. And, you know, we should be projecting economic power around the globe and not military power. It will make us much stronger.
But what do you think happens when we get into office?
Oh, wait, this is too good. Pink Shrek just asked Bobby, what happens when you get into office?
He's an assassin.
Oh, wait, hold on. Give me a sec. Let me stop the Calliope here. Yeah, go away, Calliope. Oh, the Halcyon days.
Around the globe and not military power. It will make us much stronger.
But what do you think happens when you get into office? Like, if you're talking about your uncle who's assassinated and you believe the intelligence agencies were part of...
Okay, I just want to throw this out there for a second. Joe Rogaine asks, what do you think will happen to you when you get into office, having just listened to Bobby go on and on about the assassination of his uncle? Optics matter, I guess. Joe Rogaine is sitting there in rapt attention and then asks what happens. And Joe Rogaine is sitting there wearing a baseball sleeve style t-shirt. It's a gray front, black sleeves. And across the front of it, and I could not make this up on the fly in a million years, the outline of an AR-15 and the words black rifle. I mean, this is almost a bit from the late great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, back when he was talking about the Kennedy assassination, said, yeah, you know, maybe we should all be walking around. And he stole this line from Dick Gregory, let's be clear. We should all be walking around with little rifle pendants hanging from chains, you know, just like we do with crosses. Yeah, just thinking about Jack there, Mrs. Kennedy. Yeah, just thinking about John, Jackie, just thinking about John. Black rifle. I mean, did Pink Shrek even think about his wardrobe that day?
Part of that. What happens to you?
But then again, and because I have a little bit of experience with this, both dudes look like they sparked up before the cameras started rolling, or maybe while the camera was rolling. Joe Rogaine can barely open his eyes. I mean, I'm sympathetic to that. I have hooded eyes. My eye makeup routine is deeply compromised by my hooded eyes. But it's not because apparently I just smoked the gross national product of Colorado. Gross state product. And Bobby looks the same way.
Here.
You.
Well, I gotta be careful. I mean, I'm aware of that, and I'm not, you know, I'm aware of the of that danger, and, you know, I don't live in fear of it, you know, at all.
Now, he's more scared of taking a fucking COVID vaccine. That's this genius. Or, you know, maybe he took it and just lied to everybody else and tried to get, you know, African-American families to not take it. Wonder why. You know, because he was hustling an anti-vax flick propaganda piece that was played primarily in the black community. No, no, no. Don't try to stay alive through a damn pandemic. The vaccine is going to get you. I understand. I understand, John in Central PA. Subject line, RFKKK Jr. Not trying to be an asshole, but seriously cannot listen to this man speak, and I'm not talking about what he's saying either. The voice has a man has a voice made for print, like you say. Yeah, well, it's because back in his youth, he trashed his vocal cords. I just can't stand what he says. We all thought he was so respectable once. Our buddy Ken just wrote and said, to brag, I called him a grifter on the front porch. Also, you two have been clued into that fact by his greenwashing of MTR. Yeah. Come down. Shoot some documentary footage. Fuck around a bit. Just so entirely, utterly, totally, and completely gross. Emilio said, hey, the Calliope music's not letting me hear RFK's clownery. Sorry about that. And Randy Radar points out, JFK fired the Dulles brothers. The Dulles brothers continued to be active. They later ended up on the Warren Commission. Yeah, I'm surprised Bobby didn't say, I will find the lone gunman. Or the guy on the grassy knoll. He was CIA all... What he's doing is he's ripping off the plot line to Oliver Stone's JFK, which is a great movie, but not entirely factually correct, because it's movie-making, not history. And John, you're not wrong. John says, I'm not critiquing you playing the clip. I just find it remarkable that he thinks America is going to overlook The Voice. I get it. And his voice can't stand a lot of strain. But the reason he went on Joe Rogan is because Joe Rogan has a huge audience of disaffected young white boys who want to believe the batshit crazy just asking questions jacking off shit that Joe Rogan does. There's a commonality between Joe Rogan and, say, Julius Geezer. They both represent the phenomenon of sounding like what a dumb person thinks a smart person sounds like. And this is a classic example. Oh, and as timeline's down for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, and happy I am to be back on air, we have $85, but if we raise it, it will turn into nearly $600. $85. And y'all know how I despise doing this, but it's the only way I know how to do this and keep this all going. And frankly, I've been financially hammered over the last couple of weeks. We have here in this little Eden of ours. And making up, or getting that $85 in is kind of huge. And thanks to those of you who have jumped in on it. Thanks so very much. Oh, let's run out to California. Because, well, how's about that? Some people in El Dorado County, California. I trust it's not El Dorado. Watch me find out that it is. Some folks in El Dorado County, California have declared their desire for El Dorado County to secede from California and become its very own state. Now, this isn't the lunatic babbling of the state of Jefferson. This is not the insanity of trying to carve off part of Oregon and Washington and make it part of Idaho. No, this is just one county. A woman who lives in El Dorado County named Sharon Durst has joined forces with a former California supervisor. And by the way, I cannot make this up. The former California supervisor's name is Ray Nutting. And they got together at a meeting last month, and, well, Sharon Durst had published a 7,000-word screed back in May on Substack. And Sharon Durst said, El Dorado relies mostly on its income from tourism and on the unhappy people from Sacramento, the Bay Area, and Los Angeles buying residential or second homes away from the crime-ridden metropolitan areas. Have you bought your... Hey, Matt? Have you... Cynthia? Have y'all bought your property in El Dorado County yet to get away from the... what is it? The crime-ridden metropolitan areas? And she went on to say, the people of El Dorado County want their former livelihoods restored and their rural way of life respected. Even without its geographical major economic drivers, the people of the county are economically resilient and self-sustaining. Not for long, sister. And she bogarts language from the Declaration of Independence. You'll understand in a minute why I'm giggling. Emilio, who gets a cowbell for this, said, hey, is that Ray Nutting? I'm sorry, sometimes we have to be a little juvenile here. Ms. Sharon Durst says that Article 4, Section 3 of the Constitution says Congress shall have the power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States, and nothing in this Constitution shall be so construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state. This is what happens when you read the Constitution without knowing what the Constitution words mean. Last I checked, California hasn't been a territory for quite some time. No, she says El Dorado County is other property of the United States. Well, that's halfway to sovereign citizen now, isn't it? Have you printed your own license plate yet, Sharon? How about your own checking account and your own bank? You got your sovereign citizen I don't need no driver's license? Just remember, all the stupidity is not entirely centered in places like Alabama and Mississippi Stan and Tennessee Stan and Kentucky Stan. God knows South Carolina Stan or even my beloved West Virginia. California has more than its fair share of Lulus. Witness Sharon Durst and Ray Nutting. Can't make this stuff up. Hey, thank you, Christopher. Let's do this, says Christopher. Thank you, Christopher. And thank you, Emilio. And thank you to Don in British Columbia. Look at us. We're done with the challenge. Thanks, guys. So we just knocked the fundraising down to like $1,005, which is huge considering what we've been dealing with lately. Thank y'all. Thank y'all a ton. Oh. Jude says, and Jude's going to get us down below $1,000. Jude's going to get us down to $985. She said, if I may, dear Robin, donating for the news that one of our dearest of young men at my beloved work died in a car accident after our retreat this past Tuesday. Oh, no, Jude. Spent today involved in grief work. Felt I was traveling in hospice once again. I hear this young man's voice saying my name. Broken yet, grateful to have crossed justice's path. I take that was the young man's name. I'm so sorry, Jude. I'm so sorry. You will be a blessing and a help to the other people there at your workplace who are grieving. I have no doubt of that. Not at all. A little bit of good news. This is the story of John Russell Howald, H-O-W-A-L-D. He's from Montana, Stan. It was back in February when John Russell Howald was convicted of both federal hate crimes and firearms charges. I'm sure he'll appeal to the Supreme Court on the hate crimes charge, and we can count on Fappy Thomas and Sammy Bad Breath and probably Ann's boy Neil, and I don't know. The Constitution never said nothing about no hate crimes. That means there can't possibly be no such thing as a hate crime. It ain't the straight white Christian and deist men in the powdered wigs did. I mean, they hated a lot of people themselves. How dare us? Can't change the Constitution. It's in the Constitution. Can't change it. Well, what? What John Russell Howald did back on March 22nd, 2020 was to fire an AK-style assault rifle at a woman's home there in Basin, Montana, Stan. She didn't get hurt. What she did, she wasn't hurt, but the reason that John Russell Howald wanted to shoot up her home was because she's a lesbian. At the time he was firing the AK-47, he was carrying two pistols and three rifles because the Second Amendment, y'all, protects our freedom. Just maybe not so much for the woman there in the house. But he wasn't done, John Russell Howald. And a church service had just let out down the street. And the preacher, and as folks were filing out of the gospel emporium, the preacher tried to get John Russell Howell to calm the hell down. He didn't realize it, but he actually was recording the whole exchange because he'd been recording his sermon. And so on the recording, John Russell Howell says, "I hope I killed that lesbian." I'm sure he didn't say lesbian. "And I'm going to get rid of the rest of the towns." You know. And then while people were trying to calm him down, he kept shooting his guns because freedom, Wolverines! Then the sheriff showed up and said, "Drop your weapons, partner." And John Russell Howell didn't. But John Russell Howell's a white guy, so the cops didn't blow him away. He ran away from the cops, and the cops said, "Well, you know, we'll get him tomorrow." And they did. They arrested him. And he took the case all the way to trial. And now Chief U.S. District Judge Brian M. Morris, there in Montanistan, has given him 18 years federal time and 5 years of supervised release afterward. Over at the DOJ in the Civil Rights Division, Assistant Attorney General Kristen Clark said, "This defendant is being held accountable for his horrific attempted mass shooting against the LGBTQI plus community in a Montana town. The Justice Department will continue to vigorously defend the rights of all people, regardless of their sexual orientation, to be free from hate-fueled violence. This Pride Month, we affirm our commitment to using the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Hate Crimes Prevention Act to hold perpetrators of hate-fueled violence targeting the LGBTQI plus community accountable." Might want to have a chat with the sheriff there, Assistant Attorney General. Because just letting a guy shoot into the air while... Well, you get the point. John Russell Howell is apparently a violent, sadistic person. No surprise that he has a tribal band tattoo with a Confederate flag on it. And, of course, because we were waiting for this all along, weren't we? A swastika tattoo on his left forearm. He was convicted in 2006 for shooting and beheading a chocolate Labrador retriever at a public campsite. And yet somehow he had guns. Because freedom. After he shot and beheaded the dog, he drove to a campsite where Mike and Brenda Sullivan of Butte, Montana had set up, and he threw the severed head of their dog at them, saying, "Here's your fucking dog back." He did 24 months in prison for animal cruelty and still got guns. Then again, he also threw a beer bottle at a kid in a campground in Montana. That's when John Russell Howell took a shot at the kid's dad as he walked away. Dad said he was clearly intoxicated. You'll forgive me if I have questions. You know, mass murderers, there are flags, and they're red. And you can predict behavior based upon prior conduct. Not talking about pre-crime or anything. But maybe, I don't know, with the dog beheading, God, it just breaks my heart. I love Labrador Retrievers. Maybe... the animal cruelty, maybe the throwing the beer bottle at the kid. But Montana ain't going to have no red flag laws, because that red flag, you know where them red flags come from? They come from communism countries. That's why all their, that's why your Chi-Com and your old Ruski flag was red. Yeah. Now let's see how people voted in the poll. 74% of the people said that 18 years is in federal stir is too short a period of time. 11% said it was too long. 13% it was appropriate. And there's that 2% of people, other, no opinion. You know, I guess maybe other should be, he should have been horizontally crucified. But you're right, Ralphs. He's a serial killer in training. He's going to be a real hit. Yeah, once he gets to the federal prison, that swastika tattoo and that Confederate flag will probably stand him in good with the Aryan nations and white supremacist gangs. I mean, you know I'm not wrong. All right. So I am happily back. That's the program. Thanks for helping get us down as far as you did, y'all. We may catch up with this month yet. I sure hope so. Because we had to catch up with May. So thank you to all our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. To our dear friend in the South Pacific, and you know who you are. Thank you for being there for so very long. I appreciate you. I appreciate your note. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Hey, like and subscribe to the program. I forgot that this evening. Bad me. Bad hostess. Follow, like, whatever, you know, whatever the rubric is, wherever you take the podcast, do that. Leave a comment. And tell your friends and neighbors what's going on here. This is a conversation like none other. And I'm proud of what y'all have built over the course of nearly 20 years. Intensely, immensely proud. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people. I know the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia at a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster if you're eligible. Wear a mask when you're around the maggots. They are sickening, you know. Wash your hands, don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Keep some on you at all times, you know, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance. And, you know, if some guy comes down the sidewalk toward you talking about how Stuart Rhodes was a snitch and that's why they're hiding him away for 18 years because it was a government conspiracy and they planted informants inside the January 6th movement. It was an inside job and they won't tell us who the informants were. Well, avoid that dude like the plague because he is. But always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.